This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Hey, everybody, welcome to episode 396 of the More Than Just Coke podcast. My name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined by Mike Bundy in Portland, Oregon.
Hello, everyone.
So, how are you doing today? How's the weather up in Portland today?
It's good. It's not freezing and it's not raining.
Yeah.
So, February in the Pacific Northwest, that's you take that lottery ticket when you can get it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know if you may have heard that Jaime Lopez is a co-host of mine on a number of shows. He's in Seattle, and we've been discussing the weather because we got hit with a major pile of snow this year, and I mean, I still have like a 6-foot snowbank on my front lawn. So,
whoa,
yeah, it's like you know, there's no such thing as climate change, you know, so.
Right.
So it's all good.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. Well, so yeah, I wanted to get together with Mike today to talk about his experience with Vision Pro and also his development sort of path, I guess. And let's sort of go back and get some sort of founding from you in terms of where you come from. I mean, here's a couple of things to think about. Have you been a Mac user the whole time?
Oh, yeah.
Are you you know, do you consider yourself like an iOS or Vision OS developer, or did you come to this vicariously? I know you mentioned you've done a lot of 3D stuff in the past.
Yeah. Well, so when I was in grade school, I'm 43, so I'm not a young pup, but I'm also not one of the super duper OGs. I was in third grade when the first Mac computer lab showed up at my grade school. And
what year would that be? 80 something?
89.
Okay. All right.
It's probably like 89 would have been second grade. Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, that was what the Mac Classic, right? Black and white screen.
Yeah. Probably.
They might've been a couple years old, you know, cause obviously they're not buying new tech for a grade school computer lab necessarily. And you know, just kind of got fixated with the device itself. A couple of friends of mine had 2Es at their house, you know, so we were doing the Oregon Trail and, you know, playing with the 5 1/4 inch floppies and, you know, doing that thing. But, you know, that original version of ClarisWorks on a black and white screen and a kid's brain, it just kind of exploded. And I would love to shout out my librarian's name, but I don't know what it was, but evidently she called my parents, because this is like part of my childhood lore, right? Is she called my parents and told them that I needed a computer, basically.
Wow. Okay, cool.
And it was a couple years after that I got a Macintosh Performa 550 with the, you know, CD tray that you had to like pinch the edges on and put the CD into the cassette or whatever to load
yep.
it.
Yep.
And that was it for me, you know. What was it? It was called EMAC World. Was that the first internet I had?
E-World. So,
yeah, E-World, yeah.
Yeah, that was me too, actually. I was one of the first people in Canada to get that. And
you know, I was lucky enough to have a neighbor whose brother was a developer, way older than me, and he found out that I guess you're probably, what, 8 years old when you're in second grade? I was probably fourth grade, so it's 9 or 10 when I actually had the computer in my own home. And he found out about this for some reason, how through the grapevine of the neighborhood. And he just kind of befriended this 10-year-old kid I bet he was in his mid-30s, you know? And even my mom has told me later as an adult, she's like, it was kind of weird at first, you know, like I wasn't sure.
I wasn't going to say anything. Yeah,
30-year-old hang out with a 10-year-old.
Right.
But, you know, he's teaching me how to upgrade the RAM. You know, like I remember like mowing lawns to get 24 gigs of RAM or whatever it was at $10 a gig or 16 gigs. I don't remember exactly what it was, but, you know, and he kind of showed me the real ropes of a computer, not just opening up the encyclopedia CD-ROM and, you know, clicking on stuff. He is like, you want to know how to use a computer? You want to see how to change icons and hex edit your games and do these sorts of things. Like, I'll show you. And that really set the trajectory for my entire life. I bet Jim will even listen to this podcast because I'm going to send him the link. We're still in touch. So thank you, Jim.
Awesome.
You're still appreciated all these years later. And yeah, I was really into, he showed me HyperCard. HyperCard was really big for me as a kid. It was a easy piece of software to kind of comprehend, that like step-by-step clickable scene changing sort of idea. And yeah, I hacked a lot of games. Everything was, you know, single player, so you didn't care. You were just loading yourself up with tons of credits or armor or attack power for whatever game you were playing. And you know, I was sort of the nerd god of my childhood friends when it came to all things computers when we were kids. And yeah, and then I guess fast forward to high school, that would have been late 90s, so right in the middle of the dot-com boom and the beginnings of the bust. And I was really into web development. I was lucky enough to have a awesome math teacher who also taught a computer science class at our school. And that was sort of a, you know, the beginning of that program, right? So I was one of the first classes to kind of come up through that program. And once again, I just had a great mentor that was into computers. So he's teaching us all of these things. And, you know, I think my first programming language was Pascal in freshman year of high school. And we moved up through a bunch of different things. I really got into websites. I was doing C development on a thing called MUDs. Do you remember what a MUD was? Like a multi-user dimension. It's like a text-based RPG.
Right.
You know,
right,
where everything is like north, north, east, east, kick, open door. And so that got my feet wet on that. My uncle found out that I was nerding real hard, and he was into all sorts of businesses. He was a chiropractor here in the Northwest. And he basically, sophomore or junior year, was just basically corralled me and said, "Hey, you're making my websites now. Like, that's what you do for work. And I'll pay you, you know." And then some of his friends, lawyers here in the Pacific Northwest and different higher end businesses, found out about this kid doing these things. And the next thing I knew, I had a web development business before graduating high school. Right. And it wasn't, you know, real official at that point, but it just kind of kept snowballing into different clientele and different connections. And, you know, I don't live in Silicon Valley, so there isn't that same level of just throw a rock and find a developer up in Portland. And so, yeah, that was pretty much up through my 20s and mid 20s. And then into my, whatever it was, 2009, 2010, App Store came out, and I was all in. I had already been hacking my iPhone on Cydia and putting up apps on that Cydia store in its infancy, helping a couple guys work on like their puzzle games and different things that they needed help with. And I pretty much just messed around in the App Store for years, built a bunch of silly games, and ended up getting a client from that mobile development work, just by being out there and, you know, showing that I could do these things. Because as I'm sure you remember, you know, when the App Store first came out, it was almost mocked as a like, why would you develop for this platform sort of thing? Like, there are so many other things you could be doing. You could make more money. And I just had this one love of this capacitive touchscreen device that just like landed in all of our hands at that moment, right? And I could tell that it was special. But just given what I had done with web development, it just felt natural to experiment with a new technology, because I knew how the flow went. Everyone kind of laughs and chuckles, and then years later people are going, "Hey, you know how to do this, right? Can I hire you to do this thing?" And that's kind of been my career steps all the way through life. And that's actually, you know, after running mobile development and for about a decade or more, this device landed, and I had the Vision Pro specifically. And I just kind of had the same feeling of here it is again. Like, let's ride the roller coaster again. You know,
yeah, it's at that same inflection point.
People are gonna chuckle.
Yeah. So you had apps on you were on the iPhone, first version of the iPhone. You had apps on the store, that kind of stuff, or?
Well, I was building really cheesy, dumb games because I didn't really know that much Objective-C at the time, and I was mostly a web developer, so I was kind of faking it a little bit, admittedly.
Well, in the early days, you could. I mean, you could have put a web view inside of a view and
yeah.
Do stuff.
Well, I was doing that, but I was also trying to get native, but the turn really came from just a web client in fintech that I had already worked for came back at me seeing some of the things that I was working on my iPad and my iPhone and said, hey, I want to build this financial education thing for our institution. And do you think you could do that on the iPad? And that was, you know, rang the bell again. And yeah. We were off to the races. Yeah,
for sure. It was pretty cool. I mean, it's very similar. Like, I mean, I'm obviously older. I'm probably the same age as I said. You said Jim was his name?
Yeah,
your
Jim.
Mentor? Yeah, yeah. So
James or Jim.
James. Yeah. I mean, I had the same... I mean, it sounds like we started around the same time. I started in 89 with a 2CX, and I think the Classic came out in 90. But, yeah, and you can see an SE30 behind me. That's the computer my wife used to use back in the day, right? So, but... And, you know, there's an iPhone there with that's an original box. It doesn't actually have the App Store icon on the front of it. That's how old it is.
I got one of those sitting around here somewhere.
Yeah, they're worth a lot of money. Hang on to that one.
Are they?
Yeah, yeah. Well, because especially if it doesn't have the App Store on it, that's the OG, right?
Huh.
Yeah. So
the device is probably sitting in there with a swelled battery right now.
Yeah. Well, if you need, I have an extra battery. I bought a couple of batteries off of a Chinese importer years ago. So because I retrofitted that one. Somebody had left it on. The guy broke the screen, and I guess he just threw it away, and it ended up on eBay about a couple of years ago. I got it. Still had his photos on it, and I deleted all his data, but I kept his photos in case I ever run into him again. But
right.
Yeah. But yeah, and it's just there as a demo piece, right? But same sort of idea, you know. HyperCard was obviously pretty cool. A lot of kids, like my, you know, kids that would have been, you know, my children and my nieces and nephews, did a lot of HyperCard in high school or grade school, I should say, right? So I have some of their crazy HyperCard stacks, you know, on some of my older classic Macs, and yeah, it was a lot of fun. And my first experience with the Mac was Mac Paint and things like that, which is kind of, and Bill Atkinson, who, you know, rest in peace, he just passed away last year. He's the author of HyperCard and Mac Paint, and it was an amazing tool, and there are other things that came out of it, but yeah. And then, you know, the whole journey through, it's kind of cool that you sort of, I mean, I became a developer through osmosis as well. Like, you know, I was doing a different work, and the more I gravitated towards, when I started examining what I was doing for a living, it, web made more sense, and, you know, building apps, and so, because I build solutions for people is what I do, right? That's what my pitch is, right? But
right.
And then, you know, the iPad was what launched me into iOS development, because I had a customer who immediately saw the benefit. And then I think I mentioned we both just did a 2-year meeting with Step Into Vision folks, we talked about our journeys a bit. And for me, like the iPad or the Vision Pro I was a bit skeptical, but as soon as I donned it, I was like, yeah, this is totally the future. And I feel the same way. And I. One of my slides in my talk is that, you know, we're at a point now where we were with the iPhone. There are industries and businesses that didn't exist, like, you know, Skip the Dishes and DoorDash and Twitter and, you know, or X, I guess they call it now. But, you know, there a whole bunch of businesses that came out of that didn't exist before the iPhone.
Yeah. Right?
And I think we're there with the Vision Pro, or at least with Vision OS, right? I think we were talking about that a bit yesterday, too, or the other day, right?
Right. Yeah, it's the early days of this ecosystem for sure. And yeah. if you've seen it enough times, it's pretty obvious. Like you can see it. And
to me, the big selling point is that Apple has made me believe that the things I'm looking at, the windows I'm looking at in my space, are real.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Like that's the magic of the Vision Pro. I mean, yeah, there's lots of edgy sort of annoying, you know, things stick to your hand and you're flicking your hand to get them off your hand, and, you know, or you click on things. I was dictating a message to my sister yesterday in her webmail, And I actually swore at my computer and it went into the email and I hit send and I didn't notice. You know, that kind of stuff is like edgy, you know, weird side effects of this new platform, right? But and you have to, I always joke about the Newton. Like I had a Newton in the early days too, right? And it had a program where you would teach it to read your handwriting, but I'm serious, you were actually learning how to write so that Newton could understand you.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I had the opportunity to get to play with one of those, but I didn't own one, sadly.
Yeah, but my point is that the Vision Pro changes the way you work. Like I look at my TV now and I try to pinch things on the TV.
Phantom pinching is a real thing for sure. If you spend enough time in the device, you will inevitably pinch on something. And to go back to the like realism thing, I think that's what maybe sold me the most on the device, right? Especially just as I'm sure you had a very similar experience as a developer, that to own this device as a consumer is one thing, right? Because you're very gated off to the experience that is put in front of you. But as a developer, you know, day one, I'm in Xcode rotating primitive cubes in front of me and putting particle emit. You know, I think that was one of the things that really got me into particle emitters, and most of my stuff has some sort of particle emission in it, is, I made that first blue glowing particle that was really heavy birth rate, and it's very thick particle, and I touch it, and my brain says this is cold, and I can feel a wind, and I'm going, whoa, whoa,
yeah.
there's something happening here that is that stereotypical magical moment.
Well, I mean, yeah, this is totally like if you just open the Mount Hood environment and you don't open any apps, the volume on the environment comes up and you can hear birds flickering across the water and you can hear raindrops and you can see the rain, you know, falling slightly in front of you. And you know, you're in a 360 environment. You can turn around and look, right? When you put yourself on the moon, you can look up in the sky and you can see the earth above you. It is pretty trippy, right? So
yeah, it is. I actually have a picture of that specific Mount Hood spot at the
you're near
lake.
Mount Hood, that's right. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I went and found that exact spot and took a picture of myself standing there.
Nice.
I
lived in Vancouver for a while and we could see Mount Hood from the other side, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because it's pretty major out there, right? Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
I envision, like we talk about where Vision OS is going and whether it's going to be the, and we're all, you know, early adopters and we're in here because we think like we did on the iPhone. I mean, realistically, the iPhone, in my opinion, didn't really take off until the fourth version, right? Because that's when I started seeing them everywhere. I used to go to Macworld. I went to Macworld in 2010, 2011, 2012, 2014, right? And I didn't see, it wasn't until 2013 that I actually saw, you know, used iPhones showing up in stores, you know, iPhone 4 specifically, right? But it was kind of like I walked around San Francisco and I'm like, where are all the iPhones? You know, you see them in the AT&T store, like in the front window, but nobody was walking around with an iPhone. Now I get on a subway here in Toronto and everybody on the subway car or the streetcar is got an iPhone or an Android in their hand. It's like ubiquitous, right? So, and I think I always joke about this, that Apple's going to install a chip behind our ear. That's going to be the next, you know, the iteration beyond it. Because if they can fool us to make us think this stuff is real, and they've already figured out how to, you know, experientially get us to believe this stuff is really there,
right?
Then there's no reason why they can't inject that stuff into our into our brain.
Yeah.
You know,
I might be interested in the Apple chip as long as I can still turn off the auto updates.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I don't know. Vision Pro has been one of the few platforms where I've left auto update on, especially even on the betas, right?
Actually, it is. I was just talking to Joseph the other day about that, how most of my day job I get paid for is dependent on getting good builds off of my phone and things to test flight and things like that.
Yeah.
So when all the crew is saying, oh, I just updated this. I just, the new Xcode 26.3, I just downloaded it. I'm going, I am a 26.3.1 kind of guy. I can't just jump into that. If I lose the ability to do something, it can be bad for me.
Yeah, I worked in banking, and we had 40 engineers on the iOS side and the same on Android. And we were always supporting two OSs back because people have old phones, right? Like you mm-hmm. can't get a senior citizen to update to the latest, and they can't afford the phone, first of all. Mm-hmm. So we always had to stay behind. But the whole team would have to like strategically update to the next OS or to the next version of Xcode, that kind of thing, right? It was a bit frustrating, obviously, as a developer, but yeah, it's nice that now that I'm indie, I can sort of decide, you know, what I want to do. And I have a few apps like you, like I have a few day job apps, I have a couple of them, right? That I have to be, fortunately for me, they're not that, they don't have that kind of legacy support thing, but I do have to be aware that I can't break my environment, my development environment. Right?
Yeah.
I have another Mac upstairs another M1 upstairs that if I want to get really crazy, I'll update that one before I do my main machine. Right.
I think all of us true developers do. I have an iPad or a MacBook Air here that I've kept on the old OS, but purely just so I could still have the Reality Converter app.
Oh, really? Yeah. Does that work anymore?
Yeah. It doesn't work anymore. No.
Oh, no. Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know.
So the pipeline to texture FBX is that you download off of an asset store.
Well, let's talk about that side of things. So one of the biggest hurdles I see as a Vision OS developer is that, you know, and I've been working in 3D, as you can see, for eons, right? Since the 90s, I have some archived 3D stuff that I would love to try and convert into future formats. But, and then you, like you said on the show the other day, you're famously anti Blender and anti Reality Composer Pro. I assume it means you're doing Reality Kit. We'll get into that in a minute. But so I'm curious from your perspective, because this is my thing, is that, you know, when you're building it for an iPhone, you have to have a good design, you have to good understanding of 2D space and how users react to the devices and the button sizes and accessibility and all that kind of stuff. And so design and engineering go hand in hand as with marketing. So it's like a three-way path, right? But when you bring into the world 3D spaces, it's not just about putting windows with Safari and email on them. It's about, like you mentioned earlier, building objects. And I know I want to talk about some of your apps too, because I know you've put objects in people's environments, right?
Yeah.
You need to have a 3D artist. You need to have an understanding. That's why you're digging into Blender. I've been dabbling with Blender, but I still do things in Tinkercad because I print things for my house. Like the stand for this thing was printed.
Spool stand.
Yeah, I got to download that from. Like, well, I think you have. You have a. Do you have a? Maybe it's. You have a. An A1 as well, right? Like a.
Mine is a.
What do you call it? Bamboo Lab, right?
No, it's not a Bamboo Lab. It's a. Oh man.
Maybe it's Steve that has a Bamboo Lab. Right, I think.
Now, but
I think Steve has a Bamboo Lab.
Steve has a Bamboo Lab and. Yeah. And a resin printer.
Yeah, I have an Ender. Oh, he has a resin too. I have an Ender here. Yeah. I mean, buried in the stack of boxes, which you can't see off stage here, is a printer bot from back in the day, right? So, like really old school, right? But it's like you need to have like you a single developer can't be everything to everybody and have like that. They need to team up with. Like you're downloading three, I think you're getting 3D assets from places. But so tell me about your sort of journey and how you've been battling Blender. We should talk about your plugins as well. But yeah.
Sure.
How about
you? I definitely have been battling Blender since I started developing on this platform. I am not a 3D artist in any stretch of the imagination. I have a couple good friends I've made through the Step in Division community. I'll give them shout outs, Steve Tukowski and Matthew Spendlove, two great designers, or I should say 3D artists that are attempting and doing well at finding knowledge in the Vision Pro development space, but come with the skill sets of a 3D artist. Mm-hmm. Because we as developers do not come from that world. Well, I guess you do a lot more than I do, obviously. But, you know, when I showed up to this party, I was just leaning on store assets and contacting the kids that are making these store assets and saying, hey, can I PayPal you $50? You help me fix this skeleton because it doesn't work right. And
I was going to ask you, because you showed something with armatures the other day, and that's something I haven't really got into, animating an object that I've created in Blender.
Yeah, and honestly, I tell everyone, like, I've been working on this Blender plugin kind of behind the scenes for about 4 months that really does a lot of animation armature stuff. I don't really know how to do that without making it a Python script and using Blender as essentially an API.
Right, right.
That's how I'm getting the results I need. But I'm also saving a ton of time because, you know, Matthew, bless his heart, months ago, I asked him to do one model. I've got a game that I've been kind of working on and off and on and off, and it's got about 70 character models with animations in it. And I asked him to do one kind of fix up of the asset and, you know, get everything ready. And I bet it took him half a day, you know, to just like get the stuff lined up and delete all the, one of the biggest problems with a lot of assets is Apple's current workflow requires kind of everything to exist on one timeline.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have a lot of animations, but it doesn't really want it to have the NLA tracks and these more advanced things. And most of the Unity assets you would see, as an example, come with a main model, textured, armature, skeleton, and then they've got 30 FBX files where the skeleton animates in different ways, and they're all right. Named bite, attack, claw, die, fall, jump. And that was really where the plugin started for me, was, well, I don't want to ask these friends, like genuine friends, to just go grind for 30 hours on these assets for something I'm experimenting with that may never even come out, right?
Because right.
I'm using pre-cooked assets and they may not even fit the art style I'm going for, but I'm trying to programmatically figure out how to do something. I'm not looking at it like this is the final game asset. I'm looking at it like, how do I, is it Aegis Core as an example, get a robot to idle, then start walking forward, then jump down a surface, play a land animation, idle for a second more, then keep walking. Those are problems that I didn't really see good answers for. And I've really enjoyed solving things that don't have answers on the platform, I guess. And I'm sure they will figure out better ways to do it. Hopefully there will be some Reality Composer next version that I did promise the entire Step Into Vision community that I would start learning Reality Composer Pro if a new major version came out. So I'll have to eat my words on that.
I kind of wonder, like, so I think there's a couple of things I do want to talk about Aegis Core too. I mean, like, in terms of what you just said, to explain to the audience what it does or how it works. So you're talking about Reality Composer Pro. They added the timeline in 2024, I think, right? And they've done some pretty complicated example apps. Like, they're so complicated or like deep, you'd have to spend like a month taking them apart, kind of thing. And it's great for Apple to give us that stuff to sort of poke at. But so I think what you're saying is, like, so the way I understand Reality Composer Pro is you have a scene and you put objects into that scene, and then you can run an animation, or in what I had done before they added the timeline was, like, in Reality Kit, I would do the animations, but
right.
You would bring in a goldfish, for example, which I've used in my talks, and it has flappy, you know, fins, and it kind of like motions like it's swimming. Right. And that's the animation that's built in. Or if you look at the little biplane example that Apple provides, it kind of bobs up and down and the propeller spins. Right. And so you can make it look like it's flying through your space. Right. And you know, in Reality Kit, you just say, turn on the animation, right? So it's kind of like you get one animation per entity, as we call objects in Vision Pro or Vision OS. So I kind of get the impression from what I understand about it is that you're meant to do a scene with one animation, then a scene with another animation, then a scene with a third animation. But then how do you, again, from a programming point of view, I'm thinking, how do I make sure that same object that I want to animate across the screen is the same? I'm running it through three different scenes because they live in the scene, right?
Right.
They're children of the scene, sort of thing.
Right.
But yeah. And you're saying that in Unity, you kind of get you would get like the ability to have multiple animations running in a single with a single instance.
Right. Well, it's running. It's doing some sort of magic behind the scenes. I'm not a Unity developer, admittedly. I'm a pure native developer. I'm just more assessing how the asset packs always come over. You know, it's you've always got this one asset and then a bunch of very lightweight, untextured skeletal models with a mesh.
So when you bring object into Reality Composer Pro, do you have access? Can you see a list of animations that are available, or is it that's not there yet?
Not as far as I know.
Right.
But like I said, I'm famously anti messing with that program.
So are you playing in, are you doing most of your stuff in Reality Kit? Like, are you just coding it?
Yeah. Everything's source code. Everything is source code.
Yeah. There's your Objective-C path showing again.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But, the handling of multi animations is just very odd. You end up with a lot of weird little problems too, right? You know, mm-hmm. if in the example you just explained, if you wanted to have that same model run three different animations, you could bring those in, right? But you're bringing in three textured. So a robot is 7 megs, right? You want to run three animations.
That's
21 megs of models you have to bring in for one animation.
And just switching out. You're switching out the model as if they're table view cells, right?
Right. And you're going to end up with all sorts of weird. You know, if an animation is in the middle of a arm swing and it needs to go to a jump, as an example, well, you're swapping that asset as opposed to letting the skeletal structure snap that arm back and then run that next animation. So there are a lot of nice trade-offs for putting it into a single timeline that I really gravitated towards. And from what I could tell, that was kind of the way you do it programmatically in Reality Kit. And that's what led me down the path of, well, I need to be able to script this because I'm not going to ask my friends, my genuine friends, to work for me for free to give me an asset that they didn't build and have no like artistic love of a thing. That's the worst kind of favor to ask. And so that's sort of what that was born from. And now it's pretty good. I've got a V4 that's semi ready to go out that's doing a lot of animation merging. And
you're talking about the plugin that you wrote for Blender.
Yeah, the Blender plugin.
Blender
yeah.
export plugin, right, I guess?
Yeah, it's a Blender export plugin. I just tried to most of my software on this platform is just an iterative process of like, oh, I needed to fix this problem. Where am I solving it in some tool that I built myself? Okay, I'll add a checkbox here. Oh, it needs to be able to account for that. It's been great, but I'll never consider myself a Blender pro at all. I would say I'm more of a
Blender hacker.
Script kitty. Yeah.
Well, to come back to Aegis Core, I'll explain it as I've seen it. I haven't actually played it, but I've seen Justin Ryan did a demo of it, and I get the gist of it. And from what you just said, so the way, for those of you who never used a Vision Pro before, when you're in your environment and you're wearing your Vision Pro and you're walking around your living room, whatever, the Vision Pro is making a map of your house, like all the surfaces, all the couches, all the chairs, the floors, the ceiling, the walls. And then when you fire up Aegis Core, a little robot will land. He's an entity. He'll land on an object, and then your goal in the center of the room is to shoot a laser at that. You know, I guess with your finger or whatever. Do you have like finger guns?
Yeah, it's two-handed gun.
So. Oh, okay, it's like the laser rifle from Star Trek.
Yeah, so you can look down sights and stuff.
Yeah. That's neat. Yeah. So then you're firing at this little robot, and as he's moving around your room, and he's landing on the different surfaces in your room. So do you have like one animation? Like you said, he runs and then he idles and he runs and he idles. Is that kind of
correct? Yeah, I think there's like 7 or 8 animations in that cycle of those robots. So yeah, it's a fall, land, idle, move forward, jump, fall, land, move forward, and then sporadically shooting on a, you know,
does he shoot back at the user as well?
Yeah, it actually does. It uses world tracking to keep track of where your head is, so it's always trying to shoot at your head. and it's a technology called scene reconstruction on the device that I'm using to get the room mesh. And it's probably one of the most impressive pieces of tech of the entire platform, in my
opinion.
Well,
yeah, I've played a few games that are a lot of fun, like the one where you punch the things that fly towards you and stuff. But I forget what it's called. But Apple left that on the front page of the App Store for a while or something like
it's
that.
It's still on the front page of the US App Store right now for 6 weeks. So bless whoever. If you're listening, I appreciate being noticed.
Yeah, Serenity, to pass the message on. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because I released the game in February, and I thought that I had built this, like, ultimate Apple tech porn, for lack of a better term, right? Of just, like, it's doing all sorts of custom hand gestures. It's using world tracking. It's using scene reconstruction. I'm using all of these different things, and it kind of launched to a whimper. And it sort of disappointed me a little bit. And it wasn't until I went to an event in November of last year it was called Press Start. It was like a game developer thing down at Cupertino. And I got to meet some
Apple at the developer center. Apple. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I got to go in person to that. And I met multiple Vision Pro developers that were in the kind of mixer at the end, and they all knew about my game. And I was going, okay, well, what gives? And then one of them was just like, I'm gonna go get Kelly. I'm gonna bring her over here. And she came over and said, hey, I know your game. Like, did you fix this one? And she like called out a bug from like 7 months ago. She's like, I remember the wrist was a little bit weird. And to her credit, she said, I play every Vision Pro game that comes through the App Store.
Wow. Okay.
And I said, oh yeah, I fixed that wrist bug menu. You probably just saw it at a weird time. And she wrote down a note in her phone and walked off. And then, like, a month later, it showed up on the App Store at like the end of November. Got to run it all the way through Christmas. And I mean, it is not to toot my own horn too much, but it is a great example of what the device can do if you compare it to the other devices out there. Like, you cannot. I have played in a 2-acre field, shooting robots in a 2-acre field, and I've gotten my scene reconstruction mesh up to hundreds of feet by hundreds of feet. I mean, we're talking 1,000 square feet plus, or way more than that.
I think the size of the environment on Vision Pro, if I'm not mistaken, is 1,000 meters, which is like three times that. Yeah.
So, I mean, we're talking, you know, that's, you cannot do that on another platform. If you want to, if you want to play a room mixed reality game on a Quest, you're going to scan your entire room. It's going to expect you to start play from a specific point. And if you walk outside of that scan, everything stops.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That idea of real time things, you know, like it, and I've even turned off a little bit more of the real time thing. Like I do a one shot scene reconstruction in Aegis Core. I don't continue to rescan the room, and that's just to keep it performant, because I am only on an M2 still. I don't have an M5 Vision Pro, so I haven't had to test some of that stuff. But in an earlier build of the game, I had it so you could move an ottoman around in your living room, and it would update that scene mesh in real time, and the robots would change where they were jumping and where they were standing, because I can actively get that data from the device back and rebuild that mesh in real time. And that's really impressive.
That's pretty cool. Like, yeah, that is pretty cool.
And,
yeah.
And I'm not doing any heavy lifting to pull that off, you know,
right.
Like I'm actually making the device lift less heavy the way I have it running right now, because it's not the most performant thing. I mean, as you can imagine, doing a LiDAR scan in a room and like remeshing that room at however many frames a second it's doing it is heavy. So,
what's the resolution of the LiDAR scan? Like, I know that some people have been critical of.
You know, it's not that good. And actually, for a minute, like months ago, I almost ordered an IR camera off of eBay to do some, like, get the pointillism map off of my own wall. And I never ended up doing it, but because it was like a couple $100, I'm going, is this worth a random LinkedIn video to like take pictures of dots on my wall and see how high the resolution is on the LiDAR? Probably not.
Yeah. So a quick question. So from a nerdy point of view, do you run instruments to sort of see the performance, or do you even bother with that?
Sometimes when I was originally starting it, I was, and then once I kind of got a handle on what it could handle, what it could take polygon count wise.
Right.
Then I just kind of started clamping that on like a maximum amount of robots and particles and birth rates, and it's kind of got myself into a sweet spot and said, all right, this is where it's going to go. And I,
so
I didn't
what,
really
what's
do kind of
like the
benchmark.
Most robots you can see in a gameplay session.
It depends on how, well, oh, in the current production,
like
build,
you go through different levels, right? Like it's like,
yeah,
a, it's
yeah.
A
you
level
go through
game.
Waves. I want to say it's, I don't remember the exact number I clamped to. I think it's like 35 or 40 robots. Each one of the robots, pretty high poly count. So, and I, you know, they say we're, I have heard from sources who shall not be named that there is a poly count limit of a, is it, they say 500,000. I'm giving the wrong
like that,
number.
Yeah.
I'm almost, but someone told me if your app functions performantly, no one's keeping track of your polygon count.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's more of a frame rate thing.
Well, and
you know?
there's also the side of the thing that when you're in the game, you're immersed in an experience. You're not really counting number of robots mm-hmm. that are fired, unless there's like sort of HUD or whatever that floats above that tells you what you're doing, how you're doing.
No, it's more the frame rate itself of the game. Like it'll start to stutter, and you can see. I'm sure you've had experiences where you can see the especially when it comes to mixed reality. You know, like tech wise, you're doing a scene mesh, and it's got four cameras. It's all blending together into one total picture. And there's a lot of processing going on to keep that at 90 frames a second.
Yeah, I want you to store Angry Birds moment for a minute, but yeah, it's kind of like the one thing I found is most disappointing about the M5 is Joseph pointed out that when you turn your head like this and you've got your pass through video on the M2, it's kind of blurry. On the M5, mm-hmm. it's so clear that it's blurry or that stuttering. It's annoying, right? So you can't unsee
really?
It once you've seen it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's one thing I've noticed that like I think I was in the kitchen one day and we were in the middle of a Step in Division office hours call and I turned my head and I went, whoa, that's like super annoying. But I want to come back. The Angry Birds moment thing is I was at a conference in 2010, 2011, and it was like an IT conference for Apple people, right? So we're all like educators and engineers and enterprise people were there. And I was there as an indie developer, like I was running an iOS studio at the time. And at the back table behind us, there was a whole like probably 15 Apple SEs, right? They were all sort of like there. And, you know, at one point somebody sort of said, what are you guys doing back there? And the entire row of Apple people was playing Angry Birds.
Really?
Yeah. Like it had just come out and they were all like, so I do know from this, take this as an insider tip, is that it was that meeting that you had at Apple at that thing, because you know they don't all know exactly what's going on, but so feel free to let somebody know what you're working on. If mm-hmm. I'm just talking generally to the crowd, right?
Oh yeah, I will back that up. Honestly, having been a developer on the platform since the App Store came out.
Right, yes.
But also kind of being behind the scenes as a, you know, back-end developer and mobile developer, I wasn't really putting myself out front. I got more connections and positive feedback in a 8-hour Apple session than I have in my entire career of like active development. So there is a lot of value in showing up to one of those events and doing
networking in iOS and VisionOS communities is huge, huge.
Yeah, showing them you're a real sane person, I'm sure goes a very long way. You know?
Yeah.
They don't know.
Yeah, cool. All right. Well, we should probably get to the second part of the show, which is the questions, because
I
think you and I could probably banter for like hours, right?
Probably.
On this stuff.
We're going to go do it for 2 more hours over.
So I mentioned Step in Divisions earlier, and one of the things we do on Fridays, I have two meetings on Fridays in these kind of groups, and Step in Divisions, we have on Wednesday, they do a European meeting, like a sort of a call. I think it's 2 o'clock in the morning for me, which is why, or 3 or 7 o'clock in the morning or some ridiculous hour that I can't go to. But they meet in Europe if you're interested. And then here in our time in the Eastern world or Northern hemisphere, I guess, let's call it. We have a call that starts at 2 p.m. Like it's 1:30 right now for me. So in right. half an hour, you know, we gather the, you know, I think probably sometimes 20, sometimes 30 people join. Mm-hmm. And we just have a discussion about what we're working on. And, you know, Mike's there and Mike's always, you know, always contributing some
trying
comments.
To always chatting about something
and demoing. You demoed some stuff in the last couple of times that I've been there. Like you demoed the Blender plugin, which is how I knew about that. Right. So, So I'm just going to search on my iPad for the questions. But, and this is based on, I don't know if you know who Marcel Proust is, but he has a Marcel Proust questionnaire, that he uses to sort of like, and you hear people, it's a kind of traditional way of answering questions to people. But then I've also blended in Stephen Colbert's questionnaire, as he calls it, right?
Okay.
So there's some random questions. But yeah, so we can, if you're ready, if you're seated comfortably,
yeah,
we can begin. Okay, all right. So, well, the first thing is, what is your motto? What's your sort of elevator pitch?
A rising tide lifts all boats.
Cool. Yes, you mentioned that before. And that's kind of how you feel about, like, let's get together and share that information, right?
Yeah. I mean, I have been lucky enough to not really have gotten screwed over too much in the tech space in my entire career. A lot of the people I've worked closely with are still my friends to this day, even though we work at different companies. And I personally am the beneficiary of a lot of other people choosing to share their knowledge with me my entire adult life. So it would be very hypocritical to not have that same mentality. And for the record, I'll give a shout out to Joseph. We've definitely
Joseph Simpson,
on
by
that.
The way, for those of you driving
home. Yeah, Joseph
home.
Simpson, who is the original founder of Step Into Vision. You know, I think that's one of the things he and I really bonded over most when we kind of got to know each other. He has a very similar story of mentors and sharing information. And even though we are, you know, John Haney said something on our call that really stuck with me all kind of week on that birthday call for the Vision Pro. And he said, even though we're all competitors, we're all here like helping each other out. And it really struck me. And I've thought about that a lot, just reflecting on that. We're all kind of competing technically to build these things. But when you find a honest group of well-meaning people, it's easy to feel that collective rising tide lifts all boats feeling of it just feels good to help other people solve their problems, regardless of if they're going to go release a game or a app or whatever it may be. It's still, you know, I think real developers, we all come from this world of wanting to solve the riddle.
Right.
Like
yeah.
the riddle's more important than the actual task sometimes. It's like, I just want to figure out how to do this right. It has nothing to do with being right or proving it to someone else that I could do it and they couldn't. None of that is part of the mental steps there. It's just, I'm playing a puzzle game called real life, and here's my puzzle for real life today, and I'm going to solve it, and it's going to be fun.
I come from the fine art world, and my whole career has been like artists, you know, famously had salons, and they would get together and they would show their work off, and they would criticize each other and you know, rib each other, but they were actually doing it from a genuine point of wanting to help each other. And mm-hmm. in IT, I've done the same thing. I used to collaborate with competitor IT people because we had the same problems. We all had the same Macs to deal with, and Quark Express was doing this, and you needed an Illustrator update, you went and got a floppy from somebody, you know. But I call it collaboration.
Yeah, that's a great term for it. That is really is because. Yeah. You know,
or frenemies. Yeah. It's like frenemies, but collaboration. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Collaboration. That's it. There's a new Step Into Vision shirt coming to the store this year.
All right. Well, what's your favorite occupation? I guess I could ask.
Favorite occupation. Well, I wear a lot of hats. I think I told you in our show notes as we were chatting, I actually own a CNC company that started as an experiment about a year and a half ago with my business partner of like 16 years, who's been a graphic designer he's been the graphic designer to my web development world. I really do enjoy that. Most of my life has not been building products that I can hand off to someone, and that moment of handoff is the moment of success, right? Like, and it's a hard thing to explain, I guess. In the development world, everything is a follow-up, right? It's you do a thing and you follow up and you follow up and you follow up and you iterate. If you cut a really cool thing out of some acrylic and put some standoffs on it and it's all nicely done and you hand that to someone, there's a different feeling there, because my entire career it has been do a thing and give it to someone to get feedback on how it's not right, you know?
Okay.
So I've really enjoyed building products, I guess, most recently. But I guess career-wise, I have yet to have as much fun as I'm having on the Vision Pro. Like, I think it probably takes the top mark at this point. There's even though you release a thing like a Blender plugin and everyone just floods you with direct messages saying, "Hey, it doesn't do this. Hey, the model didn't work. Hey, this thing didn't happen. This didn't happen." That's the feedback loop that I've been used to my entire life, basically. But yeah, I would say Vision Pro developer is very high on that list. And just game, I guess, to it's really just game development in general. I had to really answer that question because I've
Okay.
done so many different things. I think making games that entertain people, watching my friends come and play test like Aegis Core when it was just primitive circles rolling around a room and, exploding when they got to your feet, and watching my Android buddies put on this device that they swore they'd never let scan their eyes and just go, "Wow, this is insane." I haven't had very many career moments like that in the last decade, for sure.
Nice,
So that
nice.
was a big one.
Cool. All right. What is the best sandwich?
Pretty basic. It's probably, I don't know. Oh, that's a well, there was a I would say there was a company called Quiznos that used to exist.
Yeah, they're still around.
And they
Yeah.
had a smoked turkey that had some like chipotle mayonnaise on it, and it was toasted. I think that might be my favorite sandwich of all time. But if I have to make it myself, it's sourdough with some turkey and lettuce, maybe some Swiss cheese.
And is it toasted or warmed up somehow?
I mean, if I'm feeling lazy, it's probably not toasted.
Okay. What's the scariest animal?
Hippo,
Hippo.
for sure. Oh
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. I know
Yeah,
they're
just by
pretty
the
nasty, right?
numbers. Yeah, S-tier damage for sure.
Yeah. What's S-tier damage?
Oh, it's these kids on YouTube do tier lists nowadays where it goes S A B C D E, and it's got and they put different things like games they're reviewing or whatever. So the top category is S tier, and then it's A tier and B tier.
Oh,
So,
okay. So it's kind of like super or whatever. Yeah.
yeah.
All right. Who are your favorite authors or writers?
Boy, that's tough.
Have to pick one. You can give me a couple.
I read there were some Dan Brown books when I was younger that I read, like Digital Fortress and stuff. I didn't mind. George Orwell. I admittedly, I don't read a lot of books nowadays. I'll read a lot, but it's all technical, like it's the same. It Reading a book has the same feeling to me lately as when my buddies want to play PC video games, and I'm going, "I've been on this computer all day, buddy. If you
Yeah.
think I'm going to sit on my couch and not sit in front of my computer anymore."
Right. Yeah, no, I get that. I get that. Who are your favorite? Oh, no, I already asked that question. Who are your heroes in real life?
That's a really good question. I
That's what I
don't know
asked.
how who
Well, your librarian teacher from grade school.
Yeah, I was gonna say a lot of my heroes have had, my I would say my biggest hero is probably, if I look at my overall life, it's probably my uncle that he passed away years ago, probably about a decade ago now. But he was the one that originally like handed me some newer computers and tech in high school, and saw the potential in me more than many other people really ever have. and facilitated that in a way that I'm still living in the dividends of those choices that he made for me 25, 28 years ago. Mm. But as far as like more famous people, I don't know. It's kind of hard to idolize anyone nowadays.
Well, it doesn't have to be somebody famous. Just who's a hero to you.
Yeah. I would say it's the people that really like guided my process as a kid. Jim goes up in that list pretty high too. And I have a really good group of friends that I've pretty much grown up with. And I was born and raised in Portland, Oregon. I have a bunch of friends. We're all rarities now, but we are all from here. And, you know, we're all pretty close. And I try to take a lot of knowledge and wisdom from my close circle of friends.
Cool. What's your favorite smell?
There's some black roses on the side of the house that smell pretty awesome. It's probably flowers. I don't buy my wife enough flowers, but I love when they're around.
Well, you have Valentine's Day coming up, so you can probably...
Oh, yeah, she'll get flowers.
All right, what's your least favorite smell?
My dog steps in his own you-know-what outside and walks back in the house without me catching it with the towel.
Nice.
It doesn't get about any worse than that. Or dog farts. It's all dog-related, actually, now that I think about it.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Star Wars, Star Trek, Doctor Who, or Babylon 5?
Oh, without a doubt, Star Wars.
Star Wars?
Yeah, it's not even a question for me.
And how far, like you're in the right demographic age-wise to have seen some of that stuff in the theater, I think, right?
Well, I didn't get to see, obviously, the 70s and late 80s or 80s. The original three I was not watching, but I definitely waited in line for episode one.
Yeah,
and was young enough that it was still a great experience because that movie, you know, targeted a very strange age demographic.
Yeah.
Or tried to run the gamut of different age demographics. If you put Battlestar Galactica on that list, probably come in second.
Yeah, the new Ron D. Moore version, right? Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's a good call. So my son and I, we do a Star Trek or a Star Trek related podcast called Spotcast, and my friend Jaime Lopez is also a host on it too. And we started around Discovery, right? And but we delve into a lot of Star Wars stuff. Jonathan grew up watching Star Wars when he was a little kid. And I recommended he watch Battlestar Galactica, and he was hemming and hawing, and he probably came in around the third season. And I did the same thing with Fallout recently. Like, he's just caught up on Fallout.
Oh, I love Fallout. I've played every Fallout game.
I'm
thousands of hours into the Fallout franchise.
Well, then you can answer the question that I was asking on the podcast yesterday was, what did they take from the game? Like those big mechanical outfits.
Everything. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's the best. Oh yeah. The entire, even just like Freeside and the Lucky 38 and all of the stuff in Vegas, it was like hitting a cinematic in the game when they first arrived in Vegas. Like that, if I could go into my Fallout New Vegas save and go take a screenshot of that big sign that was all pieced together with different things.
Right.
It is probably close to a 1-to-1 recreation.
Wow. And then, but the whole plot line, like the ghoul and I know, Ella Parnell's character is kind of a conglomeration of the vault livers, right? Vault people.
Mm-hmm.
And the Legion and the California New Republic and all that stuff.
It's all in there.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's so true to the game. It's incredible, actually.
Wow, it's good to know. Good to know. I'll share that with the...
Fallout New Vegas is an incredible game. I know it's probably 15 years old now or something,
but
I cannot recommend it enough. It's
so if somebody was to start on Fallout, where would they start? Would they start from the first app and work their way through? Or is there a great moment to start at?
I would probably start at Fallout 3.
Mm.
And then New Vegas, and then 4. And then if you feel like playing an MMO, then do... I have a level 300 and something on Fallout 76, the MMO game, because I played that a bunch when it came out. But, you know, as with all things,
now, what things platform are you playing that on?
I was playing that on my PS4, I think.
Okay.
It was a while ago.
I still have a PS4, so yeah. I'll do that one. What was your first concert?
Weird Al Yankovic.
No way.
Yeah. Yeah.
When was that and how old were you?
Oh boy. 12 State Fair, I think.
Oh really?
Okay. Or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. What's the most used app on your phone, or should I say Vision Pro?
Let's be honest about this. I'm going to look at where's my usage? that's funny. Well, hilariously, it tells me Chrome. So that is the, you know, I'm pretty ADD about my phone usage. I removed all social media from my phone about 7 years ago.
Wow. Okay.
So I don't have any time sinks like that on my phone. It's probably Discord. I mostly use this as my communicator now. Like that is what the device is for. I try to keep distraction off of it because it's just so easy to waste time.
Yeah. Okay. What number am I thinking of?
13.
Oh, you're so close.
Dang. 12?
Nope. You only get one guess.
Oh.
Have you ever asked anybody for their autograph?
Yeah, some Blazers, some Portland Trail Blazers when I was younger.
These are basketball players? Sorry, I'm not.
Yeah, basketball players here in Portland. Yeah, it's our only sports team. I guess not anymore. We have the Timbers. We have an MLS soccer team now too. But
okay, cool. So flat or sparkling?
Sparkling. Well, wait, is it flavored? I'm a water drinker. I okay. like water.
Yeah.
So we drink a lot of water in our family. I've instilled that in my daughter. She loves drinking water. But I'll drink a sparkling flavored water over water out of the fridge for sure.
Okay. Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Okay.
But I did have a cat rest in peace, Boo, was the coolest cat I've ever had in my life. It was the most dog-like cat I've ever had. It would fetch, it would high-five me. It didn't want to use a litter box inside. It was very much
cat.
When I bought my previous house, she lived underneath the shed. She was a stray cat that the neighbors fed, and she became my cat for about 8 years.
Oh, wow.
And best cat ever. So I have to say dogs with an asterisk about Boo, because she was awesome.
Yeah, my wife's a dog person, and we had a cat for a while, and the cat had dog behaviors. You could call her, and he would come, because, mm-hmm. yeah, she just didn't know how to deal with a cat. just trying to find an interest. Oh, apples or oranges?
Ooh, apple.
Do you have a dream that you remember?
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah, when I was, that's, wow, these questions are awesome because they're making my brain fire weird synapses that don't hit very often. Yeah, I have, they're like, you said that, and I had this crazy fever dream from when I was a child that I still remember to this day. There was like a falling, like in a void. I should make a Vision Pro game of this. Like in a void. Like a starry void, and you just kept falling between different platforms, and I just kept walking off the next platform and falling and landing. And then I woke up in the morning, and I was on the floor from a bunk bed.
Wow.
And so somehow I had gone, you know, a good 5-6 foot drop and landed on the ground and finished my sleep in a blanket on the floor. I do vividly remember that one.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, I wonder if you staggered as you fell, like you fell on different layers, or did you just go all the way down, right?
Right.
Okay, so last question. You have one song to listen to for the rest of your life. You don't have to listen to it all the time, but when you go to listen to music, this is the song that you listen to or that plays.
Strawberry Fields Forever. That's what just came to my head immediately.
Okay.
I'll go with the Beatles for that.
Yeah.
There's probably some other ones out there too, but that's If I'm forced to listen to something, I'll take that.
So do you know, like from I worked in an analog studio back in the day in university. And do you know the sort of history of that particular song, like how it was mm-hmm. constructed and stuff as a geek?
Uh-huh. I do. That's probably one of the reasons why it popped into my mind as a, so, I mean, they were so groundbreaking at that time.
Yeah, yeah. And only in 8 years.
Putting
all
those tracks together.
Yeah,
and
only 8 years, which is amazing. All right. Oh, I should ask you one more question.
Sure.
What's your favorite action movie?
I mean, I should probably just keep going with my defaults. Die Hard is the thing that immediately popped out of my brain.
Yeah.
So if I'm keeping it honest, it's going to be Strawberry Fields and Die Hard.
Cool.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on the show, and we're just going to wrap up now.
For sure.
People want to get in touch with you. They want to find out about you, find your work. How can they do that? You're not on socials.
I'm on. Right? Yeah. My socials. I'm on X or Twitter at Mike Bundy. I'm on LinkedIn under Michael Bundy because I grabbed the namespace on that URL a long time ago and I don't want to give it up.
Yeah.
I'm also very active in the Step In Division community. So we don't necessarily, it's very developer centric. So it's not a super public place, but if you're a Vision Pro developer and you want to reach out about something, mm-hmm. that's definitely the best way to find me and many others that are in the same vein.
Yeah, I'll put links to your games in the show notes. But cool. Like, if people want to find you on the App Store, what's, you have a developer handle or?
Yeah, it's Side Result Software is the developer handle. The App Store was being a little weird the last time I went and looked at the company profiles. Like, it didn't show all of the games in one spot.
Oh,
so I don't
really?
Know if they fixed that or not. Mm. But hit the show notes to guarantee a link that works, I guess.
All right, cool. Well, my name is Tim Mitra, TimMitra. I'm on most of the socials and with that handle, Blue Sky, Mastodon, Reddit, Substack. except for that one with the symbol.
Yeah.
I'm off that one. All right.
I stuck on it for now, but mostly just because I've got that there used to be a very
it was great.
Group
I started at WWDC. Yeah, when I went to WWDC, I think 2010 or 2011. That's when I joined that thread and found it. It was a great place to keep in touch with other developers, right?
Yeah, LinkedIn is by far the best place to be posting about your AR, XR, VR escapades.
Really?
Okay. For sure. I think so.
Yeah. Oh, I do have a page. I mean, people know about it on the show, but VisionOS resources, where I kind of aggregate. A lot of us aggregate different things in different ways, but I have this GitHub page where I find things like this fine gentleman here, and I post things like that and technologies. And if you want to learn how to develop or whatever,
it's a great list. I've looked at it a couple of times.
Cool. Yeah, and it updates regularly because there's always cool stuff coming out. And I think we were talking about. We were going to mention Step In Division, or was it what else were we going to mention? I'll put a link in the show notes for Step In Division. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, definitely put a show notes. Yeah, it's a great community. It's probably the most active Vision Pro developer community on the planet, I would bet at this point. I mean, it would be hard. I would like to show me someone to show me something that's more active than that. So
right. Yeah, definitely.
It's Joseph fun. He's done an incredible job, and I'm happy to be part of it.
Okay, cool. So till next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks, Tim.
This has been another episode of the More Than Just Code podcast. If you want to find out more about the show, you can visit the More Than Just Code website at morethanjustcode.com. There you can find a summary and show notes of each episode. We list links to the apps, code, and news that we mentioned on the show. If you like the podcast, tell your friends, leave a comment on the website, or write a review on iTunes. And please recommend us in your favorite podcatcher. All of these things help others find out about the show. We really appreciate your help with spreading the word. We'd love to hear from you, so use the hashtag AskMTJC and we may mention you on the show. Friends of the show can also join us on the podcast Slack channel. Please consider supporting the show by pledging any amount on patreon.com/MTJC. Every dollar pledged helps a lot. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
And there's your name and stuff is scrolling up and...
Oh.
And I always want people to wonder what the hell we're talking about. Yeah. Or let's do that. That's a good idea. We should both get our headsets on and I'll take off my speakers and do this thing. Oh, I got to take my glasses off. I was
Look at all the wires hanging off me. Here, I'll put my developer
anymore,
strap
though.
On too. Watch this.
But I've got the so you see how I have my, I don't wear the light seal anymore.
Oh really? Oh, because you have the I have the dual strap.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Well, I have this thing as well, right? The Anapro.
The Onan Pro or whatever.
Anna Pro, yeah. Well, the other thing I like about it is I can see the dogs in my peripheral, because the one thing about I don't like about Vision Pro is the dogs can't see your eyes, right? And they get really confused.
Yeah. Oh, man. My dog absolutely hates me developing on this platform.
Yeah.
The moment I reach out and I start making these sorts of gestures.
Yeah.
He's like chomping at my hand and wants
to
play.
Yeah, thinking there's a treat in your hand or something. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I was watching a show once and I sit on the couch here and my youngest dog sits beside me and she sleeps, and I was watching something, I think it was Call of the Wild maybe. And there were dogs barking, and she could hear the dogs because it's over the ear audio. It's not like closed audio, right? So people around you can hear what you're saying, and they can hear the movies and whatever sound effects you're hearing. And so she was like, look, she was sitting up and looking around. So I flipped over, I took the Vision Pro off and I flipped over to Apple TV, and she sat there and watched the Call of the Wild with me for like a good half an hour. Right. So yeah, they're funny.
Yeah, my old dog never cared about the TV, but this little bit here, he can't handle it. You see a horse on the, he hates horses. That's like a Today I Learned sort of moment. Yeah, we were watching the new Game of Thrones show.
Oh, wow.
And every time a horse is on the screen, he's just looking at the TV. I'm thinking, I had a dog for 15 years before you, dude. Like, he never cared one time.
Yeah, but I think the difference is the LCD or the screens are easier to see for them, right? So
that would check out. I would believe that. Yeah, it's just not a white orb of glow anymore. Yeah. It's got an actual image. I can see that.
Yeah, and you know, there's a new episode of the Night of the Seven Kingdoms on tonight because of the Super Bowl.
Really?
Yeah, the fourth episode's on tonight. Of course, I'm at a concert tonight, so what am I talking about? It comes on at 9 in my time space, but yours will probably be, you know, a few hours after that. So
That's awesome. Will need to remind my wife of that when she gets home from school. That is
cool. All right, well, we should jump over. I'm going to grab some lunch and then jump into the
I'm going to do the same. I got to use the bathroom and take the dog outside and give him some water, and I'll be on there too.